Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2731. That's 2731. We may be having technical difficulties here. I'm not 100% sure. I know that I have a storm brewing again. I haven't far too much this year. I do have in the queue here a 705 area code. Are you by any chance Pam Jeffrey or Jeffroy, however you say it? Can you hear me? I hear my pussycat. Can you hear me? Hello? I guess there's a problem. I don't know. I'm not even scheduled for tonight. I don't know what's going on. Hello, can you hear me? 705 area code. Can you hear me? Okay. I'm going to assume that's a no. And I don't know who the scheduled host was tonight. However, I am here, and I can certainly run the show if you are there. But I don't think you can hear me. So I think we're having technical difficulties. So I'm going to hang up. Bye.
Hello? Hello? Hey, what's going on?
I don't know what's going on here. Can you hear me? Hello?
I hear you.
Yes,
me.
It's Carol.
I have a terrible echo.
Listen, I don't know what's going on here. I wasn't even scheduled for tonight. But I thought I'd call in and just listen to the show. And I see that it's across my screen, too, that there's technical difficulties. And I don't know exactly what's going on. But I am here,
right.
And since you can hear me and I can hear you, then the others are going to have to listen in later, won't they? Right?
There's a very bad echo.
There's an echo? Well,
yeah.
You have two numbers here. You have a 300. No, I can't say that on air. I won't do that. But you have two numbers here.
Yes.
Do you think it would be better on the other phone or the other number?
I will try again.
Okay, try again because I hear you fine.
Okay, perfect. Thanks.
Call in progress. Thank you.
Okay. Listen, can you hear me?
Oh, there we go. Yes, that's much better.
Okay, there. Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. you know, technology is wonderful, but other times it's not wonderful, and there's nothing any of us can do about it. You know?
That's right.
So I'm surprised that I was able to get in. I'm Carol Levine, and I am Vice President of NASCA. And I wasn't even scheduled for tonight. I thought I'd just call and listen to you telling your story. But others are probably, others are trying to, you know, get in probably and can't. So I did. That's my evil laugh. So if you want, okay, I can read the mission statement and we can go right to your story. What do you think about that?
Sure, we could give that a try, yeah.
Okay. All right, let me just get this out of the way. This is the, of course, we're the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. We have a signal that's of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do this two different ways, okay? Number one is educating the public. So important. That's what you're doing right now, okay?
Yes.
Especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic. Excuse me, we know that's a worldwide problem, and it does affect everyone, okay?
Yeah.
People do B&Es, they're getting the drugs, all kinds of stuff, all right? Number two, offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I usually hone in on the prevention angle of it because I think if we did more to do, you know, with prevention as a society, I think that there'd be less child abuse. I honestly believe that.
I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah. And intervention is when, you know, like, say, like, you know, some kid down the block is getting abused. And it's not a good idea most of the time to approach the kids. The kid might run, you know, get scared. But if you can, it's a good thing. If you feel comfortable, if he feels comfortable, if she feels comfortable, you can get a little information. Then, of course, you know what to do. You make a phone call, don't you? Okay.
That's right.
You know, and so we're asking for people to get more involved, and that's the intervening part, intervention part, is to, you know, get a little bit of their story and see that they're in problems or in trouble and call for help. And I just want to give this number out because the 1-800 for a child is nationwide. That way, if you live in an urban area, okay, if you live in an urban area and you don't want to get, you know, a lot of times people are afraid of retaliation and all that stuff. The 1-800 number, they make phone calls for you. They tell you who you can call and get best results, or maybe they'll listen in and talk in because you've already told them why you're calling, okay?
Right.
So that's
right.
That's a good number for everyone out there to remember. I've had them on the show a few times, and that, again, is 1-800-4-A-CHILD. Okay. Now, let me see. I don't like reading a person's whole bio, but I do have yours in front of me. I'll just read a little bit in case people can hear our voices, and I think they probably can. They just can't get into the system for whatever reason. But tonight's special guest is Pam. How do you say your last name? Is it Jeffroy?
Jeffroy, however you like to say it. Most people just say Jeffroy. Yeah.
Okay, let's say Jeffroy then. Yeah. And from you're from Ontario, okay?
I am.
The Temiscanning Shores. I don't know if I say that right.
Yeah.
That's right. You'll just say it fine. And it's from,
there we go.
From Ontario.
Yeah.
You're from Ontario. You are a child abuse survivor and an early years what are you? A practitioner at some daycare center or something, whatever. Okay, you're going to explain all this. I don't want to do the explaining. Okay.
Okay.
First of all, you're saying words that I can't say and all this other stuff, whatever. I'm so New York, and you're so Canadian. What are you going to do? Anyway, okay.
That's right.
You've got quite a story here, because I am reading it over, and I'm looking down, and I see what I hear here. I see, yeah, okay. Why don't you, this is how we run this show, okay?
Okay.
I usually contact people ahead of time. My son is going in for surgery on Wednesday. It's a bad surgery, and I haven't been. So I won't be here after today, probably for the rest of the week. So, but I'm glad I called in tonight. But this is how we run the show. And you have plenty of time to tell your story. So don't feel rushed, okay? But what we do is you tell your story, and then I'll stop you somewhere in there. And I might ask you questions. We don't have a panel right now because they can't get in. And,
oh, my God.
So that's all right. But they listen later on. They'll listen in the archives. That's what they'll do because the minute we're being recorded right now, okay? And we have archives, and they never go away. So they'll be able to listen in, you know, at their convenience and probably listen in tonight. That's what they'll do. But anyway, why don't you start out with your earliest remembrance of your child abuse, and we'll go from there, okay?
Yeah, okay. I always like to mention that first incident because it was the typical, bad man in the dark type of stranger that everyone, when they think about a child being abused, they think about a stranger or someone that's, you know, that's waiting to attack some child that they get alone in a corner. And that's kind of what that was. It was just some friend of an aunt of mine that I had never met before. It just circumstances happened that evening that I was left alone with him. I was 8 years old at that time. So it was a one-time incident because then I never saw the man again, right? But that does impact people. And I wonder about my cousins who may have seen that person more than just the one time that I happened to be there. But later on, it was a family member who was abusing me over a period of years. And this is the reality for most children out there, that it is someone who's living under the same roof or who's who's often in the home. And, you know, we need to, and it goes exactly to what you're saying in your mission statement, we need to speak up. We need to, when we see something, when we hear something, do something to intervene and protect those kids, because I didn't have that, and I really, this is what I work towards, is the prevention of the abuse. It falls on the adults to be there to prevent it or to step in when it is happening, for sure.
You know what bothers me a lot, and because it happened to me this way, and I'm certainly not alone. I was abused at home, but I was also abused outside of the home. Okay.
Oh.
And I think that even though I had all the abuses, like at one place I stayed a year and a half. And so that's 365 days there, and then half of another year. Well, out of that time, I was abused 176 times, okay?
Oh, my gosh.
And, that was between the ages 6 and 7 and a half. And he would mount me. You can be open on this show because this is just the way we are. We want people to understand the significance of child abuse and just what happens. And he, couldn't enter me. I was just a little kid, you know. Quite frankly, it would dirty the sheets, and then they'd wonder, well, why is, there a problem here and all this other stuff. And, but still in all, he would, ejaculate. So that went on and they'd have me do things to him at other times. And one time I do remember resisting, and he really twisted my arm really bad, so I never did that again. It swelled and everything, and I told people I fell on the ice. So know, because that's what kids do, you see.
It is.
A lot of times kids don't want to tell the truth because they're afraid. They're were you threatened?
Yeah,
yeah, see? You were threatened. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So my mom had had left my dad. The first time I met this man was the middle of the night. I was 11 years old, and my mom woke me up and said, "Get up, get dressed, we're leaving," and whisked us away with this strange man and packed us up and moved us from Alberta to Ontario, which is across the country, right? And it started as he was being my friend and he was being sympathetic that I missed my dad and I was sad that my dad was going to come home from work and find an empty home and all of this stuff. And he really did that, working his way into Grace's, but then made me feel like I was part of the problem. And he even said that to me, you know, "We are crazy. What are we doing?" Meanwhile, I'm laying here frozen, you know, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be doing anything, but I'm being coerced to think that I'm going to be the reason that whatever happens to us, whatever happens to my brothers, whatever happens to my mother is going to be because of me. And somehow he figures it's that I'm a willing partner in all of this. So without saying, I'm going to any particular threat. It was more a how do I say that? More of the mind kind of manipulation of, if you don't go along with this, where will your mother and your brothers be? Because I mean, we've moved all the way across the country and we have nothing now except for this person who's supporting all of us. I felt that I had to, you know, go along just to keep the family safe, if that makes any sense. But yet, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It absolutely does make sense. I mean, that's one of the things they do, is if they don't threaten you directly, they threaten your family. They say they're going to kill your pets. I saw them get killed, so I know it's, yeah, they do that. They're monsters. That's what they are, the monsters.
They are.
So that's very common. That's how they keep control of us. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. So after, you know, some time, it was probably, well, it was about 3 years, when I finally told my mom, I couldn't take it anymore because now, you know, I wasn't safe anywhere. I would wake up in the middle of the night and he would be in my room. I would be, you know, in the living room and he'd find his way over to me. And it didn't matter if my mother was around or not. Whether she just turned a blind eye or pretended she didn't know, I'll never know that. But when I did, I would go to the library and I'd read all these books on, you know, what to do when you're being abused type of thing. And so I did what they told me. I tell my mother, well, she put a lock on my door, but that was the only thing that changed in our household. And throughout years, I told as many people as I could, friends and family and my cousins, and nobody ever stepped in to protect me, right? Nobody ever did. They just, so I try to be the perfect little daughter and cousin and granddaughter and all of these things, thinking maybe if I'm good enough, somebody's gonna step in. And yeah, it never got better. Nobody ever did step up for me. And that's my, I can't, not a regret, but that's my most powerful memory, is that no one ever stepped in, even when I was asking for help. And what it takes for someone to ask for help, like you say, is children are afraid to even say it. They're even afraid to answer the question when they're being asked directly. And how could you not help, right? How could you not?
Right. Yeah. That's so, that's so sad. A lot of us go through that, though. I have to tell you, Pam.
Yeah.
I asked my mother for help with my brother. He was another one of my abusers later on. And, that happens in families. That's what I got.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, maybe it does, but it's not supposed to. Go ahead.
It's not supposed to.
I get it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't.
And it hurts.
There is
it
no
hurts.
Justification.
No.
It does, absolutely. It's not that
yes,
enough.
Like I can tell it in your voice, honey. I can.
Yeah.
I can hear it. I can hear it. And the only thing I can tell you about that is that years have gone by now. My mother passed away in 2006. And it does get better. Okay. I mean, I can look back at all those times that I was abused. I won't excuse it.
No.
Okay?
No.
No. But I look at it like it happened. And one thing good about, you know, survivorship, you know, is the fact that most of our, in my case, my abusers are all dead now. And I'm still standing. You know, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
So I won,
yeah.
And I lost, man. You know, so you won too. You won too. Because you're telling your
I
story.
Did.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
And you know what? These people, I can't answer for them. I can't figure out why my mother would allow stuff like that. And you tried to tell, I do feel the pain. I know what that pain feels like when, you know, you trust your mother, for God's sake. I mean,
right.
She couldn't even do anything for you. She put a lock on your door, and she kept the boyfriend, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For forever. So they're still together, as far as I know, throughout the years. So that, I was 13 when she put the lock on my door. And we stayed with him. She stayed with him, you know, throughout growing up. So like I had written in my bio, as soon as I was able to get out of the house, I did. You know, as soon as I had a part-time job and found an apartment with some friends and moved out, because that's the only way to get away, is to get out of the house. It's the only way. So I had to go back to back once the school year started again, but I didn't stay. I moved out again. I went back in September, went to school, and moved back out again in about April of that year. At that time, I had two jobs, and I was able to get an apartment and live on my own, and at least I know I'm safe in my own home at this time, right, at this age. But this is not, yeah, anyhow. As time went on, they were getting married. After all of these years, they decided to get married, and I couldn't. I had, when I moved out, I started going to counseling and trying to work through things myself, because I was coping with all of these other strategies, and that's not working for me. You know, drugs and alcohol and bad relationships, or a bad relationship. It's not a way to live, and I was miserable. It was suicidal, and it all comes down to I didn't want that person to have that much power over my life anymore, to feel so bad about myself and to just want to die. because it all because of this low life, right? So anyhow, when they were getting married, I took her in to the counselor and made a last attempt to talk to her about it, and I put it out there, plain. It was a safe space, right, with the counselor there, and I knew I had support right in the room with me. And my mother, her response was, well, she said, what am I going to do? You and your brothers are going to grow up and get your own places and on, you know, your life will go on. But what am I supposed to do? I need to have someone to support me. So I'm going to go ahead and she married him. She stayed with him. And when I found out, I had to realize then that this is the family I have, and it's all I have. So I lived with it for a long time. But then I found out that he had also, when I first found out that he had also molested one of my cousins, a young cousin of mine, who I considered almost a niece because of our age difference. And that's when I pressed charges, because telling people and getting out of the house was maybe a way to save myself, but I realized that he didn't stop. He just moved on to someone else, and I felt guilty for that. You know, so it turns out that there's three cousins I know were molested by him. Those are the three that have spoken to me about it. And still, she stayed with him. She's still with him, as far as I know. She's disowned me, obviously. The courts, I'm not sure how the legal system is in any of the states, but here, it's quite a long process of going through provincial court and then having to go to superior court and do it all over again. And then to be told by a judge that, I believe you, he said, but you know, there's not really any evidence. But what evidence could there be? What evidence could there be, really, when the one person who witnessed it won't, my mother refused to testify, and of course he's going to deny it, and I'm going to say it's true. So,
You know, so often it just doesn't make sense. You know, I mean, you know it, she knew it. And I'm so sorry you had to go through that. And with the guy who got me 176 times, sorry, I consider that almost like rape, because he ejaculated and he was on top of me. I mean, come on, I never know. He didn't get into any trouble or anything. No one pressed charges against him. But he did, as you said, so this is what pedophiles do. He went to the next door, the house, two houses down, but got caught. The father caught him.
Oh, good.
The living daylights out of him, all right.
Oh.
And so that he couldn't walk. I mean, he was really beaten that badly. But I always tell people, don't do that. I mean, sure, you feel like punching him, hit him in the head, whatever, right? But usually, I have to say usually, the best thing to do is to turn them in, because you're hoping that the court system will, you know, work in your favor. Let me ask you something. Mm-hmm. You had an attorney, right? Yes, no?
Yeah, I did. The Crown attorney.
Mm-hmm. And court-appointed attorney, you mean? Yes. All right. And that person couldn't say, what was your word against his, I guess? This is what they're trying to say. Is that correct?
That's what they're trying to say, yeah. And so any of the people that I had told over the years, so here in Ontario, as the because I was underage when the offenses happened, it was actually the province. Like, it's actually the province that's charging him on my behalf, right? So the Crown Attorney, he said, well, anyone that you told about it over the years that it was happening, it's all hearsay. We can't have them testify because it's all hearsay. But I'm a child. I don't know what's not hearsay when a kid's telling an adult, right? So I don't feel like I had the best representation. Yeah. Whether that's the way the system works or it was that particular lawyer, I don't know, and
let me ask you something. Now, what about the cousins? They couldn't have been subpoenaed to court, testify?
Yeah.
They were, all right.
So
and what happened?
One of them, the youngest did not want to press charge. She didn't want to deal with it at all. She didn't want to talk about it. Her mother told me, what had happened, but she doesn't. She just didn't want to talk about it at all. The other two, they both came to the provincial court and testified. And in the time between the provincial court and then superior court, one of them moved out west. So they told her, well, we're not going to pay for you to come back to testify because it's a lot of expense. So they basically dropped her charges. And the third cousin, she had been raped at the age of 14 and gone through the whole court process with that about 2 years or 3 years before I pressed charges. And when the defense attorney started questioning her and pressuring her, and this asshole is sitting there beside my mother, and the two of them are making faces at her, shaking their heads, and she broke down and she just couldn't continue. So it ended up just me. And I don't blame her. You know, she's been through a lot, and having just gone through this rape case that again, the judge told her the same thing. Well, it's not that I don't believe you, but there's just not enough evidence to convict. So she couldn't do it, and I don't blame her. Mm-hmm. I don't blame her. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How old was she, may I ask, during this time?
She was 4 years old the first time he molested her.
Okay. So she was 40.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she would have been, I believe, 17 when the first time we went to court. Yeah, she was. Mm-hmm. So she was still young and still dealing with all of this, this rape that had happened when she was 14. So
it's so dissatisfying. It's so unnerving. Mm-hmm. It's so almost a feeling of hopelessness, when you go through so much trying to get people to be on your side, to say, hey, this is what happened. And I have to say, kudos to you for being able to look at your mother, sitting right there without, I have a temper, without punching her and saying, look, you put a lock on my door, and all this other stuff. It is very, very upsetting. It truly is. I'm so sorry you had to go through that,
It took a long time.
We all have our stories.
We do.
Yes.
It took a long time not to feel... not to, carry that weight. I still do feel guilty that I was not able to do something before to prevent these younger cousins you know. Mm-hmm. But what?
Well, you, honey, you were going through your own PTSD, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Post-traumatic stress disorder, and mm-hmm. all right, you finally got wind of the fact. You found out later on this wasn't happening. I don't think at the same time he was, giving you trouble.
No,
maybe it was. It doesn't.
No,
no. It happened later on, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, whether it
go ahead.
Whether it was happening anywhere else, I can't see. When it began, we didn't live close to my family, so he didn't have access to those cousins. Well, they were not even born yet at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was happening somewhere else, because in the strangest kind of twists of just life, my dad knows this person from years before. They're both miners, so they worked in the same mines. My dad knows of an incident where this guy was ran out of a town, out of a mining town, because he got caught with somebody's 14-year-old daughter.
Uh-huh.
And mm-hmm. yeah, so this had happened before, and my dad had tried to warn my mother, but the things are so bitter between the two of them, you know, she wouldn't believe him if he told her the sky was blue. It just, mm-hmm. it didn't serve her, so she wasn't going to listen. Whether this was, he was hurting any other girls when we were living in northwestern Ontario, I don't know, like at the same time as me. But I didn't have any family around that he would have had access the same way he had with my cousins once we moved closer to the northeastern Ontario. Yeah, and then the younger girls were around. And even though I've told all of these aunts and uncles, and as their children are being born and those baby girls are growing up, and they know because I've told them, and they still do not protect their daughters.
You know, this is very upsetting, and you see, first of all, with first-time offenders, now that was probably the only time he had gotten caught at that point anyway, with the 14-year-old girl that you're talking about.
Right.
But they have found out, I mean, studies show this, that first-time offenders have offended between 120 to 128 times. Now, that means like 10 times with one kid, maybe 5 times with the other, maybe 15 times with another. Do the math yourself. It doesn't matter. It comes up to 120 to 128 times. And that's just a guesstimate. But pretty much they all agree it's between 120 and 128 times, you know. So you see, when you come out with a statement, which is a quite normal statement to come out with, you think, well, okay, it was that one child. There's probably no way, because you see, after he was done with you, then he went to the cousins, and that's at least 5 more there, 3, 4, 5, whatever, and then 5 in all. And so, like I said, you know, it could be 10 times, 5 times, 15 times. God only knows. Now, these people who are walking the street, who belong in jail, they continue to abuse, because that's what they are. They're pedophiles. Like the first house that I was in was not a husband. Good God, an uncle through marriage. Well, my husbands were nuts too, but anyway, they didn't do that. But anyway, he was an uncle through marriage. So we weren't related by blood, which doesn't make it any different. The point is the guy did the crime, okay?
Yeah,
So after he recovered from being beaten so badly, he and his wife moved down to Florida, and he continued.
Oh, no.
So you see, they don't stop. That's my point.
They don't
stop.
No. And I think in this case, him being a minor and that lifestyle of, and that's how, it's just how the industry is. You're in a place for a while, and then that mine, you know, it booms and then it busts, and then they move on and off they go to another place. So how many are there? Because we know I was not the first, and we know I was not the last.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So, by the way, if this isn't being recorded right, we'll have you back again. We would, you know, reschedule. Because there is technical difficulties here. I just want you to write down that your scan number 2731. Okay? 2731. And we'll continue on with the show. But I want you to have that information because when people come on so often, they want to hear what they sound like. You know, they want to go back. They want to hear it. They want other people to hear it and all this other stuff when they go into the archives. So I'm just giving you that. And, you know, you would look for your name, okay? And also the date and then the scan number, those three things, name, date, and scan number, and you'll be able to find it, okay? Down at the bottom of the page, the NASCA website, that's NAASCA.org. Are you familiar with that website?
Yes.
I don't know if you are or not. Okay. Well,
I've been looking at it, yeah.
Well, if you look down,
there's
see
a lot
current,
of great information.
It's wonderful. But you see it, where it says a current, I think it says current schedule, that's what you would click on to get your show for tonight.
Okay.
Okay, and then you'll scroll down to 2731, and then you'd be there. But anyway, the point is this. What you're telling, you know, we all who are on NASCA, and we have Monday, Wednesdays, and Friday shows, you know, so that people can tell their story. And what you're doing by telling your story is such a wonderful thing because there are a lot of people who are listening. They just some can't call in. Obviously, I had a terrible time getting on the show.
Yeah,
right?
I waited quite some time in the waiting room. Yep.
Yeah, I saw that. And I could see you, and I was clicking on to you, and I couldn't get through to you. So if it doesn't come out right, if it doesn't, we'll have you on again. And you'll get to do this twice. Yes, you will. All right. Yeah, bravo, bravo. And you'll be reaching a lot more people. There you go. That's a good way to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Let's go on with your story. Well,
sure.
You know, I'm so sorry that the justice system failed you. That does happen in the States a lot, too. Although it's getting better, because people are talking more about it, okay? They're talking more about, you know, children being abused. And when I wrote my book, Panic Child, A Harrowing True Story of Sexual Abuse and Neglect, which is on Amazon, there was only one other book. One other book. That's it. I wrote it in 2010. All right. So that's a long time ago now. All right. And now in 2010, I don't even know where those years went. And I'm not even having fun. It makes me mad when I think about it. But anyway, you know, what happened 5 years ago? What was I doing? Was I having fun? I don't think so. Okay. So anyway, in 2010, there was only one other book. I wrote under memoirs. See, I wrote a memoir. So there's only one next to me. Now, if you look up in Amazon, if you look up in Amazon, you know, under sexual abuse memoirs, whatever, which way you want to put it, child abuse books. Of course, now we have books for children. This is very good. People have written books for children. Now there's a whole bunch of books, okay? And that's wonderful because the word is getting out, whether it be through writing a book, whether it be through being on a show like this, or whether, you know, it be on other radio stations. I've been on quite a few radio stations. Whether it be doing presentations at colleges, which I do quite a bit before the COVID, all right?
Right.
That's has put a damper on a lot of things. All child daycare centers, I work a lot with child daycare centers, are starting to open up again. Every state is different, okay?
Yeah.
Everyone has their own little policies out here. Biden will say, well, we should all wear masks. And then other people will say, no, we shouldn't. Didn't do any good. I got it anyway, And so there's all this, blah, 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 going back and forth. And no one seems to know what to do. You know what I'm saying?
No.
So
yeah.
When I see a daycare center that's open, I take the NASCA website. If you go under any one of those lines where it says programs, and at the end, I forget what it says. I don't have it in front of me right this second. But they're red bars, and it has programs and so forth, child prevention, how to work with kids, whatever, which way it is. There's quite a few. You click on to that. And a whole menu of articles and good information, comes through. So what I do is, what I've done in the past even, presentations, I would use what we had right on our website and take that into, I'd make copies of it and take it into the university and, run presentations with that. Because I'm noticing as I'm looking at your bio here, all right, you abused drugs and alcohol. Let's talk a little bit about that because most of us do. We're trying to numb out that feeling,
That's
I started when I was 13. 13 years old I started drinking. Yeah. And I was out on the streets too, okay? I went out on the streets because I was trying to get away from my stupid brother, wasn't I? So, you bet. So I went out on the streets and was actually treated quite well there because I was the youngest. So many people have a younger sibling, and so they took care of me more or less. And they were into heavy duty drugs, so for them to get me beer, that was lightweight. Okay,
it was
beer.
Yeah,
well, what's that? Here, kid, have another one. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Those deals. So I had a good time actually, for the most part. For the most part, out on the streets. Of course, there was a lot of crime. I stayed away from that. There was a lot of sexual activity. I stayed away from that as best as I could. And, I didn't do IV drugs. I didn't do heroin. A lot of my friends did. They were older. And they wouldn't let me do heroin. I didn't want to. Believe me, I didn't want to.
No,
I didn't want to go on the nod. Okay, I didn't want to do that.
Right.
But so I drank. So you you have here that that you drank, and was that as soon as you were 16? It says as soon as I was able at 16, I moved out of the house. I was depressed and suicidal. I was also, but determined to get out. And when did your drinking start? I've used drugs and alcohol. Was that around when you moved out?
Yeah. I think I didn't drink a whole lot when I was at home. You need to be aware. You need to be alert, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there were times that I was encouraged to drink by my parents type of thing. Yeah, but no, not at home. But once I left, or even once I was, how do I explain that? I was very controlled up until the age of, say, I think I was 15 when my stepsister moved in with us. So up until that point, I couldn't leave the house. I wasn't allowed to go do anything away from the house and that type of thing. But once she came, his daughter, she was from the city and she was much more headstrong than I was, I guess. Definitely more worldly. Then we she demanded more freedom. And so when I got that freedom, that's when I was able to start to meet these people and get access to these things. And so I pretty much was high from, you know, from the age of 16 to 20. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's just a way to cope. It's just to not feel, right? Not feel.
Yeah, oh yeah. But coping mechanism, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So working and dealing with a crazy boyfriend and yeah, and doing that.
I give you a lot of credit, though, because you finished high school. You're able to do that. I wasn't able to do that.
Mm.
There are a couple reasons. I was being, you know, mocked in school because I had terrible parents. They wouldn't buy me clothes, and they were so wealthy. That made it even worse, okay? And my brother, the golden boy, we had a guest on to call her brother, a golden boy. I like that. So I'm stealing it from you, okay? So my brother, the golden boy, okay, you could open up his closet, and he had a wonderful wardrobe, okay? You open up my closet, there's 2-3 little things there, you know? So I had to go out and steal my clothes. Oh, yeah. So I wasn't meant to be. I wasn't supposed to be. She just wanted one kid, and then she had me because she got – my mother was actually raped one time, and we know as women if it's that time of the month, you know, you're going to get pregnant. There's a good chance of it, and she did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
now
no.
That I popped.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She should have given me up. I wish she had. But
yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
The point, yeah, I would have maybe had a better life. Maybe. Okay.
Yeah.
So the point of, you know, we're trying to numb the feelings. You know, your mother wouldn't listen to you. She just put a lock on your door. And then to have then a half-sister, okay, on top of it all, okay. Or was she a stepsister? Which was a half
My
step?
Stepsister, yeah.
Oh, okay, stepsister. Okay, yeah. Right. And was she treated differently than you?
Absolutely she was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She was daddy's girl. Right.
Right.
Life was much different when she came to live with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took advantage of that. Because up until this point, I mean, the control was, it was crazy. The, I'll never understand why, but I was not even allowed to go to the open house when I was in my last, you know, couple of months of eighth grade when they do an open house at the high school so you can get a feel for being in the big school and find your classes and that type of thing. It was complete control. I was just not allowed outside of the house. But once that stepsister came in the house, she wasn't having that, right? She was used to having a social life. She came from Calgary, so living in a city to come and move into. We lived out in the country down the back of some side road, and, yeah, life changed. And so I took advantage of that. I thought, well, if she's going, I'm going. You know, if she's smoking,
right.
I'm smoking. If she's, yeah. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how did your parents feel about you drinking and if you want to call them parents? I don't even call my parents. I don't feel like I had parents, but.
No.
Well, I didn't really. Did they say anything about you, you know, drinking? And did they know how much you were drinking ever?
I don't think they knew. No, I don't think they knew. If they did, they didn't talk about it.
Right,
no.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think that's, I can identify with a lot of what you're saying here because, you see, my brother was wanted. I wasn't wanted. I didn't realize all this other stuff until my stepfather told me that my mother was raped and out I popped. I knew that I was treated differently, always treated
right.
differently. But I didn't know why. And
right.
my grandmother, who I thought was my grandmother, I had ancestry done. And that's a really cool thing to do. It's only $69. And so I found out, you know, that, gee, I'm Italian, I'm French, you know, I'm Swiss. And then also, too, I have German. That was my mother, and I knew she was my mother all right. But anyway, oh, boy, I get fresh at times. But, you know, the point is I had, like, a whole different perspective of myself. I realized after she passed away, my stepfather was 10 years older than she. I'm sorry, my mother was 10 years older than my stepfather. I had it backwards. And so she went first. And then he tells me, you know, your mother was raped and you were born and all this other stuff. So that's why I was treated differently. But that's not nice for children, for God's sake, to go through that. You know?
No,
absolutely not.
And no child ever asks for that. We don't. And I had this conversation with one of my parents at one time was, I did not ask to be brought in this world. I didn't ask you to, you know, my two parents, like I say, very bitter, very, very bitter between the two of them. And it was, we were punished for it. Myself and my two brothers were punished for that. So children do not, my point was, children do not ask for this. We don't ask to be born into this world. If you've chosen to have me and give birth to me, then I deserve to be treated with, you know, some love and some compassion. And if you didn't want to have me, then you shouldn't have. Like you say, given me up for adoption or not have me at all or whatever choice. But you can't punish a child for coming into the world. It's not, they had no choice in this matter.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And well, what I thought was my father, and he wasn't, because ancestry showed me that. She pushed me off as being one of them. See, she was scared to death of this man. And by the time I was six, which is how I got into the pedophile house, she left him, and she dropped me off at this house to live. And I don't think she knew he was a pedophile. I won't blame that on her. But she left me there because she was going to save for a divorce. And then she met my... Yeah, that's why she left me there. And Golden Boy, he went to her parents where he was treated like a golden boy. Okay.
Right.
He didn't know it was like to be cold and hungry and sexually abused and all this other stuff.
No.
I mean, you know, these are the things that happen to kids, Pamela. You know, it's awful. It's awful. What happened to you is awful. And you don't feel like in your case, and I can certainly see why, that there was any justice ever. Okay.
No.
And your mother sitting in front of you in that courtroom when you have a court-appointed attorney, he just wasn't good. He was, a lot of times they're not, okay? They're not dedicated. They don't have the same education and all this other stuff. So it just got nowhere. How frustrating that must be.
Yeah.
So very frustrating. Yeah.
It's heartbreaking. It is. You know, by the time we got there, it had been, like I say, 2 years in the court system, and how long before that the charges had been pressed. And at one point, they had left the country. They have a home in Arizona that they stay in the winter time, and he had been charged and is not supposed to leave the country. But I found out through family members. Luckily, I have some friends who have some friends, and anyhow, they had to come back. But this was years in the making. So by the time we got to the courtroom, I wasn't surprised by her behavior, but I was still very. I don't even know what the word was. I can't say disappointed because I never expected anything from her by at that point. But to make excuses and she made up a health condition and whatnot so that she wouldn't have to testify, because she knew if she got up on that stand and she told the truth that her husband was going to go to jail, you know, and she couldn't, she couldn't do that because then the money would go away, right? And that's, to me, that's her, that was her bottom line. Yeah. So,
Do you think he threatened her or anything? I mean, I know of one other case similar to yours, just like what you're saying, where the children, let's see, there were two children that were being abused by the mother's boyfriend. And then also, too, they ended up getting married. Same thing. Same thing like you're saying. And years later, one of the girls actually took him to court, and she got her sister, I guess she subpoenaed her, I don't know, but she too had to testify, and that guy, at least he got 8 years.
Oh, good.
Now, 8 years
you
is
know,
not a long time, but at least
it's
something,
not.
Okay? It's
That's
something.
Right. Yeah.
And in your case, you know, you didn't get anything, and when it happened to me in Staten Island, New York, I at the age of 8, I was kidnapped and raped. I was one of 14. And he had me the longest, and I was the last, okay? The next little girl who would have been number 15, a teenage boy, had been in the newspapers. A teenage boy saw him pulling a little girl. I had the car. I knew what it was. It said Plymouth right on the dashboard. In those days, they did that. They put Plymouth, you know, whatever your car was, just on the dashboard. So I knew it was a Plymouth, and I knew it was light blue, and I looked at him. He had him. He took me the furthest away, so I had a good look at him, okay? And so I was able to tell the police a lot, and he was caught. And all we little girls had to go to court. We had to do this. We had to go to court. One little girl peed on the floor. She was so scared. She was so frightened. This was not closure. We already knew what he looked like, and we already knew what he did. And, yes, maybe if, you know, there was only a couple that had to actually testify for all of us, which we were thankful for. None of us knew who they were going to be. They just called our name, and they didn't call my name. And I was real happy, to be honest with you. The courtroom was packed, Pam, with people. And when this guy got sentenced, he only got 3 years for 14 little girls that we know of, right? That we know of. And he got out in a year and a half. Are you there? Are you there? Oh, boy. Are you there? Okay, let's see if we can get this gal back again. That's a shame.